But the thing is, I just immediately that Sunday spoke at an event, got laughs. So I just called my buddy that was a last runner-up on Last Comic Standing. He became my co-creator. And he was in my office the next day. We start working on jokes. So find a co-creator because sometimes you have ideas and things you want to do, but it's easy to just get out of that if you only talk to yourself in your own head. So find the co-creator. The second thing, and this is critical, you've got to eliminate escapism. Escapism is when we get caught up in like a movie or TV series character rather than our own life, because sometimes it's like easier to numb out with the news or social media rather than, have a relationship with ourselves. So to eliminate escapism, just think about things you've been sweeping under the rug that hope will go away. Think about things that you haven't addressed, where you haven't taken responsibility. Like, I get it. It's easy to make excuses, like excuses that we're too busy to do something, or that we pretend these projects are so big there isn't time for anything else. But if we don't like eliminate the escapism, we won't find the space to do the things we want. So you find your co-creator, then you eliminate your escapism, and that just might be bad habits. Things that you do to sabotage your success because you're afraid of what that next step might be. Can you do it? Are you willing to do what it takes? Do you have the skill sets? I'm here to tell you have to be willing to suck at something long enough to get good at it sometimes. Sometimes you have to be willing to be in the moment of being like, I've written 10 books. I was scared to write. Like, I didn't think I was a good writer because I didn't have the best grammar, and all that. I'm from Price, Utah. I don't even know how to speak English hardly. So now I'm gonna write books. Like it took eliminating escapism, which would be creating artificial busyness to sabotage my success. So what do you do to create these excuses that prevent you from the things that you want to do? You've got to eliminate those things and it finds a space. Then the third thing you do is you delegate. And the way you delegate is when you build momentum, when you have personal and professional like progress, then you start to delegate roles, roles, not tasks. You find people you can permanently offload something to, so you focus on what you do the best. And that might take time before you have the financial wherewithal to do it, but you can always start with like, virtual assistants, independent contractors. You could find ways to get there. You don't have to hire someone immediately, but you start to offload things. And I have a simple phrase I just have in my head all the time. What are the five things I want to do more of? And what are the five things I want to do? And then I would just look at your calendar and be like, does this reflect the story of your life or the story of how you want your life to be? Because our calendar might just be filled with meaninglessness and busyness that actually prevent and rob us from what we really want. So co-create, eliminate, delegate, and then finally collaborate. Find the people, and when we get into these personas, I always look for people that have different money personas than me. I look at people who have different Kolbe profiles, Kolbe. That's about KoNation. Kolbe.com tells you how you like to go about doing things. I like to find people that have a different KoNation than me because then, like, if they're just like me, we're just gonna we're gonna have a lot of ideas and not enough execution or whatever it might be. So I look for people that are the winning personas, the winning money personas I'm not, so I can utilize their skills to leverage mine. So let's go through those money personas. There's four money personas, and there's really a winning side to each of these personas when you're in abundance, and there's a shadow side when you're in scarcity. And scarcity usually comes from isolation or belief that there's not enough to go around, that it takes money to make money, that high risk equals high return, that that hard work is the only way to get ahead, that if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. Scarcity is a place of feeling that people with money did something wrong to earn that money through deception and coercion rather than value creation. It's a place where people believe in a finite pie and there's only so much to go around. And so scarcity is the greatest destroyer of wealth. It's a limiting mindset that limits our actions, it deters our vision, and it gets us to think in very small ways. So no amount of luck, saving, discipline, or return will save someone if they're in scarcity. It will destroy and decimate prosperity. So scarcity leads to a shadow persona, and abundance, or that co-create, delegate, and collaborate, that working with others leads to a more abundant innovation and ingenuity that, if someone has money, it's because of evidence of value creation, that there's plenty to go around, because even if there's a finite amount of money, they're adding it to computer screens as I say this, there's an infinite number of times it can go and exchange hands. And the more times money exchanges hands, the more value is created. The more value is created, the more wealth there is. If we went back hundreds of years and we could take a bird's eye view and see what was going on, like I went years ago to the Palace of Versailles. That's a big monstrosity. I just got back from the Biltmore Estates in South Carolina, 150,000 square foot home. Only a jackass that inherited money would do something so stupid. Like, what are you going to do with 150,000 square feet? By the way, like a 20 square foot gym, that's why the Vanderbilts didn't live long. They knew how to eat and not move, but whatever. Like, damn, you could see someone's level of like what's important to them. But as I look at like all of these things, the reality is you are your greatest asset, and you've got to invest in yourself. And if you understand the shadow and winning personas, you can understand how you operate in abundance and in scarcity and the impact of that. And so really the first money persona is on the winning side, the mindful manager. The mindful manager is detail oriented. They're efficient. They're great at improving things. They're great at being resourceful, and they know how to reduce waste. That's a mindful manager. So I had this guy, Dale, and when I met him, he was a miser. That's the shadow persona. So the shadow persona, the miser, plays a game called preservation, right? And they know the price of everything and the value of nothing. They don't value their time enough. They know, like, if they drive 30 minutes away, it's cheaper gas, or the price per ounce at Costco versus somewhere else. It's like they don't value their time enough because it's all about what they could save, what they can eliminate, what they could cut out, what they could, just hold on to. Like, there's people that are misers that know that if you melt nickels, they're worth more than 5 cents. Like, that's what a miser is, right? They just, again, they think of only in how to save, not in to create. And that's where Dale was. When I met him, his wife said that he was obsessed about money. But he wasn't really rich. He just cut back. They spent like, I don't know, $5 at DI for their five kids for Christmas. Like, that was basically the mindset. And then he came to a workshop that I did and decided he wanted to be financially independent instead of just being a miser. So he went through and he took his skill sets as an engineer, and he spent an extra 20 hours a week. Sure, as a miser, he made his family live off food storage, which is a very Utah story. Someone living off food storage for a while, but within 362 days, he created enough cash flow from his assets to be financially free. And this is where everything changed, because he's no longer so worried about money. He came to me and said, "I want to work for you." I'm like, "Well, I don't really have a job for you." And he says, "Well, I wrote a paper called Cash Flow Optimization. Here's where most people are leaking money." And then he started to work for me, made 10 times more. Now he travels to Europe for at least 2 weeks a year, which he never traveled anywhere, like, because it was too much for gas, wouldn't pay for the flights. He bought me a really nice like jacket that was probably $800, which was more than he spent on his kids in 8 years, after having this transformation, because it wasn't just about what he could save, it's what he could earn. It's what he could create. It's how he could support others. And he took that mindful management, and instead of being a miser and thinking of just his only budget, and he saved tens of millions of dollars for our clients over years, saving them on tax, saving them on interest, because he took it and applied it to service of others versus selfishness for himself. That's the distinction. Miser, only thinking of yourself. Mindful manager, thinking about others. And that's the key to wealth. So let's go to the second piece here. That's kind of a play not to lose philosophy, and this one's kind of a play not to lose philosophy in the money personas. There's a one money persona that's called the planner. The planner's stable, they're thoughtful, they're strategic. They can monitor the effectiveness and efficiency of any initiative. Sometimes you'll see CFOs that are planners. Sometimes, like, you'll see just people that are thinking about, hey, can I forecast what's happening, and how can we think about integrating and getting things done? That's a planner. But on the kind of negative side, or the shadow persona, is the conservative. And this isn't a political thing, it's just simply fiscally conservative, meaning that they, again, it's all about how much they can save in a diversified portfolio. They will delay happiness and gratification because their entire life is built upon accumulation. You might have people in your life that are conservatives. They always think that you spend too much money and you're reckless with your money, and they got to tell you how they know better than you, right? They know the price of the cheapest index fund, and they talk about retirement all the time. Again, it's always delayed gratification and happiness, but never truly being happy along the way. So the planner is bringing those skill sets to others. The conservative is judging others and really in this like really myopic place of only thinking of themselves. Those are the first two money personas. You obviously want to be in the abundance of co-creation and delegation and collaboration, and be in the focus of service of others, solving problems and adding value, because that'll put you in a winning persona. Now, there's two other personas. One is the creator. Creator is an artist, an inventor, or an entrepreneur. They think with innovation and ingenuity, and they create new ways to add value, right? That's the creator. But there's also the striver, which is the shadow persona. The striver has a mantra. They think they can outwork anyone, but you know what hard work really leads to is exhaustion. It doesn't lead to wealth. And there's these guys brag and wear like a badge of honor, like, I work 16 hours a day. I'm like, great, you don't know how to delegate. So impressive. You know, I mean, they're posting and bragging about this on social media. But the striver is an impatient, busy malcontent. The striver plays a game called status, and they think they could just work harder to earn more, but they will inevitably burn out. So the creator has boundaries. The creator sees leisure as a worthwhile activity. The creator takes care of themselves and others, where the striver just thinks they can outwork everybody. The last money persona is the catalyst, and the catalyst is a visionary. They're a connector. They're a mover and shaker. They think and play big, and they show us ways we can win together. However, on the flip side, on their shadow persona, the shadow persona is the high roller. The high roller plays a game called opportunity, but they cut corners and take on too much risk, which leads to short-lived riches. These are people that rent the Airbnb and pretend it's their home. I call these guys the financial dick pics, because they got to be a dick to post a picture in front of a private jet that's not theirs. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's these kind of people. So they might be the life of the party, but they're also like arrogant, braggadocious, one-uppers, name-droppers, you know? So that's kind of the thing, is you want to be in your winning persona. And the way to know that is you can go to garrettgunderson.com/quiz, and then you can take the quiz to find out what money persona you are. It'll tell you the great traits, and it'll tell you the things to watch for so you don't slip into scarcity or get into that kind of negative shadow persona. So yeah, that's a good way to start there. Jay, any other questions you have?
And those are the ones that are in your Money Unmasked. Is that where the personas are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And Money Unmasked, and maybe I could have, maybe I'll see if Trisha could drop those books off to everybody today. I don't think she's far from you right now.
Oh, that'd be so awesome if she could stop by. We'll be here till 2, so that's great. The question from Josh.
Yeah, so what is the biggest differences between the co-creator and the collaborator?
So the co-creator is one other person. Collaborator is a team. So let me give you the rest of the story. I decide I want to do comedy. This guy Marcus becomes my co-creator. I have to like face my insecurities of like, can I do comedy and all this kind of stuff. And then I have to like start delegating things in my business so I have time to prepare and rehearse every single day. Jay knows, he's had to come watch it. And then finally, collaboration is I'm filming it. I've got executive producers, I've got set designers, I've got 8 Emmy winners on my crew, I've got the editors, I've got all these people that have skill sets I don't have at all, which made it a much bigger vision. You can actually watch that comedy special on Amazon Prime. It's called The American Ream. And I went from in 2017 had an idea to do an open mic to being like, I want to get this on a streaming service, having no contacts or understanding how to get there, but just being committed to those 4 steps. Marcus is my co-creator, and then eventually I get these collaborators. I got Marty Kollner, who invented the Comedy Hall of Fame, to be executive producer. He won an Emmy with Seinfeld. Like, I just was able to get the team because I was committed to the vision, and I used that formula. So, it does take rehearsal, it does take work, but if you have the right framework, the work becomes more like inevitable versus like hard.
Nice. So what are the responsibilities and how do you find a co-creator?
Like when I write a book, I'm like, who would be an amazing editor? And I'm looking for an editor if I'm writing a book. If I'm going to be a speaker, I'm like, who's the best speaking coaches? And like, we're just in a world where I think the best place you go start looking is YouTube. It's one of the best search engines, and you start looking for someone there, and you find out who you resonate with. What are they teaching? How are they teaching? What are their free resources? Are they helpful? And then if they are, then you can engage with them, depending on, what level you're at as far as financially or whatever it might be. What I found was I was able to really get a lot of relationships because being an author myself, I realized how fickle I am and how open I am to flattery. So I'm just really good at like, if there's someone I want to learn from, like I'm here speaking at this event in Omaha for someone who I've watched their YouTube videos forever. Someone said he mentioned you in a YouTube video. So we reached out, and then he's like, yeah, you're one of my favorite authors. So obviously he said he likes me as an author. I was already enjoying what he did and was willing to be a fan and support him in any way I could. I've just done that with people I meet that I want to coach me, is I think, what do they value? What's their currency? There's this, my first coach, Dan Sullivan, owns Strategic Coach. It's the biggest coaching program for entrepreneurs, thousands of entrepreneurs. I finally saw him at the office one day when I was going through a session, and it was in the bathroom of all places. I was like, hey man, I'd love to get to talk to you, get to know you. I've been listening on audio all the time. He's like, oh, come on over, we'll have lunch. Well, there's a bunch of people surrounding him. So I just called the office. I said, "Hey, next time I'm in town, is Dan going to be here? I'd like to have lunch. We were supposed to. He got sidetracked." So they set it up. The whole time at lunch, I was going, "I've got to figure out what really matters and to him and what he really values." Because I was in my 20s and I didn't have a whole ton to offer yet, but I learned really quickly he cared about referrals. So I hosted events, and so we had an event with 170 people that I let one of his coaches come and talk about his program, and I became one of their top referrers, which meant I had built this inner circle relationship where I had one-on-one time with someone who only really coached in groups. So you could simply be a fan of someone's, like I have, right, well, I'm here. I've got a friend that just wrote a book that wants to get it to Myron, who's hosting the event, so I'm gonna personally hand it. You just build relationship capital. You make deposits into good relationships, and when you find those people that you can grow with or that you know, like, and trust, you can engage those services. But a lot of services today, if you don't have the money, you just got to have the time to go through it and the discipline to go through it online. And then as you grow, then you'll have the money to be able to afford it. But yeah, like the best search engine I know is YouTube, and you can find tons of people on any topic that can help you with anything that you want to do.
That's awesome. Awesome. I noticed one of the things you're pointing out there is, and you mentioned this before, that in your 20s, your best tool is building the relationship capital by just networking, building it, and then later you're able to leverage those relationships for building financial capital and things like you just examples you just said.
Yeah, you make deposits in a relationship capital as often as you can before you make withdrawals. But most people only make deposits or only make withdrawals. So I know people that always contribute, but they never ask for help. I know other people that only ask for help and they never contribute. You know, people that always ask for help and never contribute, I call them ask holes because they ask a million questions and they never do anything. And so I'm like, I don't, it's frustrating. I don't mind giving a free advice when someone does something with it, but when they don't listen, you know, like I have someone that literally said that they were suicidal. And they have $3 million of equity in their home. I was like, cool, just sell your home and you don't really have a money problem anymore. And they didn't sell it. So I was like, after five calls, I was like, hey, I don't know what else you want me to tell me. You want me to tell you you don't have a problem. You just said, won't sell your house.
Yeah.
So like, I have no more advice. I'm not going to give you money because that would be, I'd have to foreclose on your home if you can't pay me back. You don't even want to sell it. That's going to ruin our relationship. So a lot of it is, you know, I just know that people love reviews of their books. I know people love comments on their videos. I know people love, like, I'm always going, who do I know that I can connect them to? And I'm always looking for ways to like bridge relationships and bring people to the equation. And then when I had money, I just bought my way in. There'd be masterminds I'd just pay, you know, big dollars for, even though it was a stretch, but it allowed me to build a network because I didn't come from money. I came from a coal mining town. My dad and grandfathers and great grandfather are all coal miners, so I didn't have any financial wherewithal. I had to kind of learn it. And, you know, that was the way I did it.
So you did it by building relationships as part of your wealth building tools. And I think it's important that maybe you can address for them the five pillars of wealth, because a lot of times we think it's always just money, money, money. And that's really not, that's just a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, money's definitely an important piece of the puzzle because I kind of look at it like air. When there's a lot of it, you don't think much about it. When there's not a lot, it's suffocating and it's pretty concerning and it kind of consumes all thoughts. So there's five tracks of wealth, and the first one is financial or material, that financial or that money. But the second one is purpose. I know people that have money and no purpose because they inherited the money and they're miserable as hell. Like they really are. Like you think, oh, how awesome, you got all this money, but it feels really hollow to them if all it is to be spent. And there's something about earning the money yourself that really matters, or growing the money that you do inherit. That's also extraordinarily valuable. But if it's no purpose and there's money, it's really not very wealthy. The third is mindset. Mindset and viewpoint and perspective. If you don't have a good mind about money, if you don't have a good mind about your life, if you don't have a good mind about, like, hey, what do you want? And are you grateful for what you have? Money isn't going to like solve all the problems. I look at like money as like one of the best ways to rent happiness. It definitely does a good job. Like, and Coco Chanel said it best. She said, the best things in life are free, but the second best things are very, very expensive. And
Nice.
so, you know. But if someone has the wrong mindset, money won't cure that. It might make it worse because it's a magnifying glass. And the fourth thing is health. You know, I had kidney problems, and when I had kidney problems and I had insomnia, it really didn't matter how much money was coming in because I had a lot coming in at the time. I just felt really hopeless because I just wanted my health back. And so
Yeah.
there's a proverb that says, when you have your health, you have a thousand dreams. When you don't, you have but one. So health is wealth. You've heard all the cliches. I really agree with it. And then the fifth thing is social. I just feel like too many people go through life and it becomes less fun by the year. And social is our relaxation, it's our rejuvenation, it's recreation. It's seeing leisure as a worthwhile activity. It's finding time to reset, to enjoy life. Like, not to wait for retirement to finally enjoy your life, but enjoy your life along the way. So it's about having depth and harmony in these five tracks, not balance. Balance will be impossible. There's gonna be ebbs and flows. There's times where you're gonna be really dialed in three or four of these areas and one thing needs a little bit of attention. Don't beat yourself up about it. Just go like, okay, what can I do to make this better? And depth means you're present. I think wealth is when people can be present. It's our ability to be present. And when we're not present, because we're always chasing the future or running from the past, that's really a bunch of dissonance that is frustrating. The second thing is on harmony, it's just intentional. Like, write the story of your life. How do you want your money to look? How do you want your mindset? What's purpose mean to you? What's a good social life look like? Like, start to build that and think about that. I have space in my calendar. I have my coffee and connection and conversation with my wife in the morning. We just finished our backyard. Jay came and saw it. We have a little nook where we just go and we just talk about what's going on. And then at night we do a vision and visit. Sometimes that's in the hot tub. Sometimes we're just, you know, sitting out by the fire and just having a conversation. So, because when we're not intentional about that, we just watch Netflix. And I hate everything on Netflix right now. The algorithm sucks. I'm bored with it. I don't want to watch a single thing. So I'm like, why don't I just have a conversation instead? I got intentional about it instead of being in the rut of just being like, oh, I'm tired at the end of the day. So, you know, you start to create that space for your life. And when you create the time and space where it actually lives in a calendar, I find like a lot of people blow off their tasks list, but they don't blow off their meetings. So I just treat life where, what are the things I want to carve out that I have time for? You know, like, and I like to make silly names for it, you know, vision and visit. I like to make like Saturday study. I want to study what's going on in YouTube so I can understand how to make better videos. Like, so I just name it to claim it. And then I put it in the calendar and then it's part of my life. And I just leave space. I don't make sure everything's taken up because then I'll get overwhelmed or exhausted. Mm-hmm. Like on Wednesday, I was just like, you know, I want to go put together some exercise equipment with my dad that I just bought and hang out with him. And rather than hire someone to come up and paint this wall because we did something new at the cabin, I'm like, I'm just going to paint it because by the time I hire it and pay it out, it's just like sometimes having those little projects, because I'm working in the world of writing a book, seeing a physical thing happen, I just create some space that I have time for that every week. You know, and if you have those free days, then you're more focused on your days where you're being productive. And sometimes the best way to build a relationship is just hanging out. I went on a hunt with one of my friends that I do business with. That was the most time we've spent together. And he got an elk before me, so he teased me the whole time. But mine was so much bigger than his. I was like, things come, you know, whatever. And then I went with another one of my friends the next week and my dad. And, you know, it's just like, that downtime, it gave me time to think and it gave me time to hang out, and there's a little bit of depth to it. So it's not about waiting till you're a certain age to have those experiences. It's about experiencing it along the way. It's about enjoying life along the way. And when you create a life that you enjoy, if you create a life you don't want to retire from, you've already won the game. Like, I'm not going to retire. I retired for 3 months. It was the most miserable time of my life. There's not anything to do on a Wednesday when you're in your 40s and everybody else is working and doing stuff. And there's nothing on TV. It's like, there's only so many hobbies. There's only so many times I could go fishing or shoot a bow or whatever it is. So it's like, I like having purpose. So that's me. Like, what is it for you? You just got to get really clear what you want and don't feel guilty about it. Don't feel ashamed. Don't try to live your life for someone else. Too many people are trying to appease someone else or please someone else or get validated from someone else. It's like, just be okay with what you want. Like, you know, like, this thing was $1,000 somewhere. That's stupid, but I love it. Like, but I wouldn't pay $5 for wine. I don't give a shit about it, right? Like, just know what you want. And then go all in on the things that are worth it to you and forget the rest. You know, I spend less money today than I used to because I think I used to want to be cooler than I was and have, like, I bought a Bentley. I looked like a douchebag when I took a picture with it and put it on social media. Someone's like, what's wrong with this a-hole? And I kind of agreed. Because I tried to convince myself, oh, we're going to get amazing clients. No, if we were going for like 13-year-old boys, we would have crushed it. Like, they were definitely super impressed by that car. When I took it to Price, Utah, people were like, what's wrong with your Chrysler 300? There's something wrong with the grill here. Like, nobody cared, you know? And I'm a truck guy. So, like, now I just buy my truck and, you know, my friends from Price, they don't think it's a truck because it's a Raptor. And My wealthy friends think I'm white trash, but what it doesn't matter. I'm fine. I'm happy with who I am. You know?
That's awesome.
Wow.
Oh, great stuff.
That's the hardest thing in life, Jay, is just for us to know what we want and be okay with it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm still dealing with it. Like I've people pleased where I'm saying yes when I really mean no and doing stuff begrudgingly and sacrificing. And, you know, now it's like sometimes people ask me to do stuff and I'm like, someone made me endorse their book the other day and I said no. And there's like a shock to them. I was like, I really don't own an explanation, but it wasn't a good book. So that was the main reason. They didn't have an original idea on it. They should have just called me quoting Robert Kiyosaki. I was like, it just wasn't good. So he was upset about it, but I was like, hey, in the old me would have endorsed it and regretted it. So now it's like, I just say yes when I mean yes. And I say, no thanks. And I'm honored that you would think of me when I mean no.
Yeah, nice.
And what it does is it saves time for me to do the things that matter most instead of have my family suffer or my health suffer or I suffer. I don't want to, like, life is going to provide enough pain. You don't need to advance it by saying yes to people who are a-holes.
Mm-hmm. Sound advice.
That's sage right there. Just quote that. Post that.
Right there. There it is. Any questions or comments? Well, I know, Garrett, that I just want to ask one more for you. I know that you teach, as many of the other coaches we were listening to this morning, that we are our best investment. What about the power hour? What about that for investing in ourselves?
Yeah, so I thought of this thing called long ago. Now everyone has something about this, so it's not unique. But at the time, I thought it was. Mm-hmm. You know, my buddy Hal Elrod wrote one of the biggest books on it called The Miracle Morning. But the power hour is, you want to be in a producer mindset where you're adding more value than you take it from the world. And so have time in the morning to work on body, mind, and soul, or exercise, education, and enlightenment. Like, you know, I like to get up, and most days I'll listen to something like from my spiritual mentors or like an audio book or just even one of my coaches, and just kind of get some good thoughts in my head while I'm making breakfast. I eat right when I get up, and then, you know, I write in my 5-minute journal to focus on gratitude, set the intention of the day. It's just a nice little thing I got on Amazon by Intelligent Change. And it talks about my affirmation. So I just write that every morning. And then, you know, I've never posted about it, so nobody knows if it's true, but I do have a cold plunge and I do get in that. But I used to do 5 minutes, and then my son told me I need to do 2 minutes. And I was like, that sounds amazing. I don't know if that science is real, but when I find out cold plunges hurt us, don't help us, I'm gonna be really pissed off when the people that told me to buy one of these things and lay in this stupid cold thing, you know. And then I work out after that. And so, yeah, do the cold plunge, do a little workout. And then, you know, that's kind of my morning. I do some meditation some mornings. I'm not as consistent as my wife. She's a great meditator. But you figure out whatever that practice is for you. For some people, the way they get into gear is, I decided stupidly once to do a triathlon. I'm glad that I don't do that anymore. It's the most, like, I don't know why I thought that would be a good idea, because I didn't know how to swim. And right, you know, I got a swimming teacher. I swam every morning, which I hate swimming long distances anyway. I swam yesterday 5 laps. That's amazing. 5 laps in and out. Like, I could do that all day. But I remember getting in the water and my sister ran up to me and handed me the phone right before my triathlon started. My mom's going, I really have a bad feeling you're going to drown. And I thought, what an amazing pep talk, Mom. I'm still going to do this anyway. And here I am. So, but you can have like some competition you get involved in to make the workouts better, or you can involve other people in them. Like on Thursdays, I got my 2 buddies that come and work out with me. On Wednesdays, we have a trainer that comes out and I work out with my wife and son. So I just try to make it where there's a little bit of a game to it to make it more fun. And then, you know, a little reading or listening. So just like taking care of yourself before the rest of the day starts, before everything gets busy. We got another hand right there.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so what do you say to the people who maybe are discouraged by like the state of the economy and maybe being like, feeling like it's harder now than it was in the past and yada, 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 and that kind of mindset?
Yeah, the people have been saying that for centuries, man. It's always been, you know, it's always the good old days and it's always everything. But like, I mean, you can only control what you control. So I look at like yourself as a stock. What's the step you could take today to elevate your value? Like, I got to tell you, when the economy's bad, I usually do better, because that's when everybody cuts back. It's like, it's when they start getting caught up in the fear. And so I'm being a leader during that time. Like, I don't know how the economy is going right now. I just know we just broke a record this last week. We got 11 new enrollments. That's the most we've gotten in a week for our program that we started July of last year. And so I wouldn't know what's happening in the world from the news. Like someone said, we could be like a major war on our turf, and I would be the last to find out. And I take pride in that because I don't think our brains were meant to know every bad thing that's going on everywhere in the world. But when I walk out my door, it's going pretty well. I look around, when I'm at my cabin, people are happy. They're fishing yesterday when I was walking the river. Like, I just think that we get caught up in all of these stories because our brain is addicted to negativity, and the news is clickbait to get you to be derailed and distracted as a form of escapism. So does that mean that there isn't bad things? No, there absolutely is, but they're not reporting all the good things that are happening either. Yes, inflation has sucked. Yes, interest rates have gone up. At the same time, you don't have to participate in that conversation. We speak wealth or poverty with our conversations, and most people get caught up in the poverty conversations and they become victims to it. And guess what? I can't control the economy. And here's one thing I can tell you. The world is always going to find itself in a fucked up place. I know, sorry for the language, but that's the bottom line. It's always going to be that way. And there's always going to be people that thrive. In 1929, when we had the Great Depression, a third of the people were exactly what you saw. Suffering, struggling, thin. Their houses were recalled because back in those days, they could just ask you to pay off your house even if you'd been paying on time. A third of the people maintained, but they had to work harder. It was a struggle. But what most people don't know is that's the time we had the most millionaires created in the United States. A third of people actually prospered during that time. Because in times of chaos, people look for vision, and visionaries create value, and that value is what people start to follow. So you can either get caught up in all of the problems of the world. And what I find is that people only want to talk about the problems of the world. Like I've had to, astute, like when we were in Spain with my in-laws, they were just caught up in all the negative news in 2023. And so I just wrote these 3x5 cards one night, and then just at every meal, lunch and dinner, tell me about your best memories as a child. What's the time you were most, what was the funniest moment you had with your daughter? Like just, we changed the conversation. And the 3x5 cards is the only way I could do it. And then we just made a rule. No politics. Like I'm done talking about politics. No matter who you vote for, they're all pretty much assholes. So like let's just move on, you know? Like yeah, there's greed there. There's greed everywhere. But there's also good. So why don't we be part of the good instead of fanning the flames of the problem? That's kind of my mindset. Some may call it ignorance. I call it being rich, you know? So bottom line.
Nice, very good. Hey, well, Garrett, is there anything? Do you have any programs going on now that 20 somethings, 30 somethings can jump into, affordably connect with you and stay in your mindset of?
yeah, I would at least subscribe to my newsletter, GarrettGunderson.com, then just click on the subscribe. Or I would just honestly start following me on YouTube, Garrett.live in an internet browser, or go Garrett or YouTube.com/GarrettGundersonTV. Subscribe. I'm getting a lot of traction there. I'm putting out videos like, every week, 30, 45 minutes once a week, and then I'm doing little shorts every day. Sometimes it's a little funny anecdote, whatever. And if you want to see like why people are broke, just read the comments. You know what I'm saying? You can see pretty quickly where people are at. They're more concerned with arguing than embracing. Now, not everybody, I'd say 80% of people are positive on there, but I can just watch and see where people are based upon that. But I think that that's the easiest thing to do is start following me on that. And then, if you want to engage more, just my team's usually in the DMs, and they'll push things over to my inbox too over time, so you can ask questions, stuff like that. But that's a good start.
That's awesome. Garrett, thanks so much for taking some time with us. Let's give him a round of applause. Thank you, Garrett.
Other lesson, always have your assistant scheduled, because otherwise you're in Omaha when you're supposed to be in Utah. I live in
Fair
Utah, so I'm zooming into Utah because I was going to be there with you guys, but thanks for letting me zoom in, Jay, and sorry about the I'm rich, but I'm not good at calendaring.
enough. Thanks, Garrett. Awesome.